Welcome to episode 292 of the Ski Podcast, and thanks for joining us, listener. I'm your host, Ian Martin. Today, we're going to be finding out about two very different areas, La Zuma in Switzerland and Jasna in Slovakia. We also have our regular snow reports, plus we'll be previewing the Milan Cortina Winter Olympics and the key dates to pencil into your diary and the best chance of British medals. But before we meet today's guests, I'd like to thank Tyrol Austria for sponsoring the Ski Podcast and making this winter's episodes possible. Look, we've already covered 9 different ski areas in Tyrol, including, and I'll take a breath here, Innsbruck, Ischgl, Tyrol West, San Johann in Tyrol, the Ski Veld, Ski Jule, Surfaus Fisladis, Zillertal, and the Arlberg. I really do recommend you catch up with these episodes if you miss them. I've genuinely found them so interesting to find out more about an area I thought previously I knew pretty well. Right, let's meet today's guests. My first guest has been on the show many times before.
Regular guests will recognise her beautiful Irish lilt.
I'm delighted to welcome the doyenne of Irish ski journalism, Catherine Murphy. Hi, Catherine. How are you?
How's it going, Ian? Thanks for having me. My dulcet Irish tones are slightly soaked in the flu today, so not feeling too well. But, you know, surviving.
I appreciate you joining us. Let me just ask, where are you today?
Back in Dublin. Just got back from the French Alps. I've been in Saint-Gervais for the last few days, skiing in some nice, fresh, natural new snow.
How beautiful. My second guest today joins us for his first time on the show, Slovakia resident Richard Patey. Hi, Richard. How are you?
I'm very good. Thanks for having me on, Ian.
Are you in Slovakia right now?
I am. I live here now. I left England last summer. And, this is my new home.
Oh, and whereabouts are you at the moment then?
So I'm in the city called Poprad, which is close to the High Tatra Mountains.
Well, we will be talking about them later. Now, a question I always like to ask my guests at the beginning of the show is, when did you ski or snowboard last? I think Catherine's given the game away. It was in Saint-Gervais earlier this week.
Saint-Gervais, yes. So I skied. Yesterday was the last day I skied. And so I skied there for 2 days. One day on the Saint-Gervais side, then yesterday we took the Mont Blanc tramway to ski the Les Ouches side, which was lovely, through the trees in fresh snow. Very nice.
And you're saying fresh snow. You had a little bit of new snowfall because there hasn't been any for a little while, has there?
Yeah, I think 3 weeks before they'd last had snow. We didn't get a huge amount of snow. It was just a nice little top up and, you know, put some snow on the trees, which makes a difference to the experience, doesn't it?
And what about yourself, Richard? When were you last on the snow?
This morning.
Where was that?
So that was in a little ski resort at a place called Stary Smokovice in the High Tatras, which is just about 15 minutes drive to the mountains, a really nice drive for me. It's a little local hill, and there's some fresh snow overnight, so I thought it would be nice to get a couple of runs in.
Oh, and how was it?
It was good. It's been very cold in Slovakia over the last month, really. Like, the snow quality is very good here. Good is part of my morning routine. If there's fresh snow, I'm going to be going here.
That sounds great. Well, we'll find out more what about skiing in Slovakia a little bit later on. Let's have a listen to some updates from some of our reporters from around the world as to the snow conditions in different ski resorts.
Dave Burrows from SnowPro Ski School reports from Morgeat in Switzerland, part of the Port de Soleil ski area. James Cove from Planet Ski is based in Canada this winter. This week he reports from Revelstoke and Kicking Horse in British Columbia. And Guy Beetson, who reported for us from New Zealand last summer, or their winter, has just been out in Furano in Japan.
Hello Ian, it's Dave from SnowPro Ski School. You join me from a lonely bubble lift in Morgeat. And on the outside of the bubble lift, it's snowing, which is unexpected, but also excellent. We've got quite a snowy week in prospect, but actually it snowed reasonably heavily, about 10, 15 centimetres. Yeah, we had a super day Monday, and then it got bashed down, and it was super light, this snow. It's really, really fantastic. And the pistes were probably the best condition that they've been in this season, I would say, on Tuesday, which was fantastic. Up here again, it snowed overnight again, so it's Wednesday today. It's due to snow for the rest of the week and on into the next week as well, which is fantastic. The conditions are fabulous here in the Port de Soleil. So fresh snow everywhere on top of beautiful firm pistes. All the links and all the liaisons are open. Everything's gone kind of snowy again, which is really fantastic. Over kind of Christmas, New Year, it's a bit scratchy everywhere, but it's kind of returned to normal levels of snow for the winter. And actually, if you look at the curve of the kind of average annual snowfall for the region, we're actually bang on track as to for a sort of a normal season. So absolutely fantastic. It's beautiful skiing here. Hope all you and the listeners are well. and I will see you soon. See you later. Bye.
After the record levels of snow in December, it's been, well, a bit of a dry January, shall we say. In terms of the snow, that is, not the wonderful local craft beers on offer that we've been sampling here in Canada. This week I've been in Revelstoke in British Columbia, that's seen 7.6 metres of snow this winter. On Planet Ski's three-day visit, we had no fresh snow really worth talking about, but the resort is in excellent condition, and we found amazing chalky and grippy snow in the resort's famous North Bowl. If Revy's not on your tip bucket list, then I really do suggest you put it on now. It's an amazing place. I'm now in another of my favourite Canadian resorts, Kicking Horse, which is just a couple of hours away over Rogers Pass. Again, there's no fresh snow at the moment, but the earlier falls mean there is full coverage and the cold temperatures have kept things in great shape. This part of Canada is seeing some of the best conditions in recent years, and overall the current conditions are far better than the USA, which has seen a pretty poor winter so far.
Kia ora, Ian. It's Guy here checking in from deep within the freezer of Hokkaido, Japan. I've just wrapped up a brilliant 3 days here based in Furano, and if there's one headline for the listeners, it's that it's cold. Real cold. We're talking proper Jap-hour temperatures, mercury dropping to minus 24 Celsius overnight, and barely scraping 8 during the day. The conditions have been fascinating. I missed the absolute monster storm cycle that hammered Hokkaido earlier this week, but that worked in my favour. It left a massive soft base, and the skies have been relatively clear. We had that rare magical combo, deep dry leftover powder in the trees, but with bluebird visibility. This joy was heightened by skiing with my son Mitchell, with the snow quality on the groomers being grippy and fast. It's that famous squeaky snow you only get when it's this cold and dry. I've also managed to pop over to Tamamu and Kamui Ski Link, some other ski areas that are about an hour's drive from Furano. It's been slightly cloudier there, with some light snow showers refreshing the tracks. Kami, by contrast, still had a little bit of untracked powder on the edges of the runs and in the trees, and it was an unexpected bluebird day too. The forecast is suggesting another storm system rolling in over the coming weekend. So for me next week, it's going to be about hunting those stash pockets in the trees and warming up with plenty of ramen. A classic January in Hokkaido, stiff legs, frozen faces, and absolutely no complaints. Back to you, Ian.
Great. Well, that was really interesting to hear. There's lots of new snow all around the world. Let's move on to the Olympics now. This episode will go live on Friday, the 30th of January, which will be exactly 1 week before the Milano Cortina Winter Olympics start in Italy. I am super excited about the Games, and we're going to be covering them on the Ski Podcast with some special episodes and some special guests coming to you throughout the 2 weeks they are on. Firstly, a note on the name of the Games. Technically, these are the Milano Cortina Games, but that is the last time I'm going to use the Italian pronunciation, because we didn't talk about the Paris Olympics. So from now on, I'm going to refer to the Milan Cortina Olympics. That's just for the pedants out there, of whom I'm usually one. Secondly, I wanted to let listeners know I've created a downloadable schedule that only includes the skiing and snowboarding events and strips everything else out. I can't speak for all listeners, but I doubt I'll watch any figure skating or luge. I'm sure the heated rivalry effect will boost the ice hockey viewing, but the schedule I put together makes it easier to see what day and what time each of the snow sports events are on. I've put a link in the show notes so you can have a look, and you can do what I've done, which is to print it out so that I can plan my time around it. And listener, apart from watching stars like Marco Odermatt, Michaela Schifrin and Lindsey Vonn, as the majority of our listeners come from the UK, we will have a definite focus on Team GB. And some of our athletes are coming to the Games in great form. Since our last podcast, Team GB athletes have picked up a stunning 5 medals at the X Games in Aspen, including 3 golds. There were wins for Zoe Atkin in the ski superpipe, Mia Brooks in the snowboard slopestyle, and Kirsty Muir in the ski slopestyle. Now, we need to note that the X Games is an invite-only event, so not everyone was there, but this is a record-breaking haul for Team GB, and it shows that these girls are in excellent form coming into the Games. I've interviewed all three previously for the Ski Podcast, so if you'd like to find out more about them, I'll put links into the show notes.
So, with the Olympics on our doorstep, I took the opportunity last week to catch up with Vicky Gosling, CEO of GB Snowsport, to ask her about the team's build-up and aspirations for the forthcoming Games.
I'm delighted to welcome Vicky Gosling, CEO of GB Snowsport. Hi, Vicky. How are you going?
Hi, I'm really well. Thank you. Super excited. The clock is ticking and it's...
Very exciting, as you're saying. You're at the BOA in London at the moment, is that right?
That is correct. I'm in the Olympic offices. I'm just surrounded by kit bags. Because tomorrow we have kissing
after that. Now, regular listeners will recognise your voice because we spoke in episode 222. That was just over a year ago. Now, you were appointed in 2018, the first Olympic cycle that you ran was Beijing. And in that interview, we talked about all the different challenges of Beijing. It didn't really feel like that was a real Olympics. Possibly, you know, does it feel to you that this is the first proper Winter Olympics?
For me, this has just got a different vibe in that, you know, it's like a home from home games. We're going to be on the same time zone. We're not all locked down. We're not wearing masks. We're not having to do COVID tests every day. And the precautions are obviously less clear. We want to keep everybody fit and healthy. That's slightly different. But there's a certain buzz that I'm feeling now. You know, friends and family are going to be in town. It'll be slightly challenging because I'm spread across four different locations, but that's it. You know, I'm going to be based in the Vigneault, which is a great place to be. So yeah, exciting times.
I mean, I've spoken to a number of the athletes and I know lots of them are very excited about the idea of having family there who are able to come and watch. It wasn't possible last time around. And you mentioned about, you know, keeping them wrapped in cotton wool. You know, when Mia Brooks, I got the list from GB Snowsport saying, oh, Mia Brooks was going to be in Larks last week. And when she wasn't, I thought, oh, my God, I hope she hasn't got injured. But turned out she was just focusing on Aspen instead. Can I ask you, when we spoke last, we spoke about a goal of having Great Britain as a top five snowsport nation. Now, whatever that means, I wondered if you had in mind a kind of target of medals we might want to walk away with.
Yeah, look, I guess I've had time, haven't I, in this role, and I've had the opportunity to see these incredible athletes delivering fantastic results across all levels and across numerous disciplines. And so we've had the privilege of seeing the growth, and we've had the privilege of seeing the credibility and the success that has gone in particular in the last three seasons. When I look at the Olympics, I feel that actually from the experience of Beijing and just understanding and seeing, you know, some of the injuries we've had with Kirsty, with Charlotte, that anything can happen. So whilst I feel that we're taking the strongest and deepest team, you know, in terms of potential that we've ever had, I still feel that anything can happen. You don't know exactly what form all of the other competitors are going to be in by the time they get there. If all of the stars aligned and our athletes went for it, then, you know, you'd hope it would be raining golds, right? So that's an idea. And that's something that we probably all dream of. But that said, I would hate to put too much expectation on our incredible athletes.
What about then if I said a range of 2 to 4 medals? How does that sit with you?
I think that's reasonable. Let's face facts. I do think that is reasonable. But I also have to be realistic. And I don't want to mismanage the general public's expectation. I think they should tune in to See Who Dares and follow the incredible journey of these five female athletes in particular, with Mia, Kirsty, Zoe, Michaela and Charlotte, and just see what it takes and see what they're capable of and let them make their decisions when they see them in action.
Now, interesting that you mentioned those athletes in particular. Are they the ones who are featured in the forthcoming series on Discovery Plus?
They are. It's called She Who Dares. It's a 45-minute documentary about those five women. And I tell a little bit of an underlying story of their journey and the journey we've been on for GB Snowsport, and they tell their own stories as to how they've got where they've got. It's really telling. They're incredible athletes. They're very relatable. It's fascinating for people to work out how has Britain ended up with, you know, Charlotte Banks, world champion, individual and team. Mia Brooks, world champion, individual, age 16. Kirsty Muir, we've seen, you know, some consistent podiums with golds in freestyle ski. She's from Aberdeen. Mia's from Manchester. Kayla's from Essex. These are incredible females that have just gone above and beyond, and they've been nailing it. So, yeah, people need to watch it.
Now, I know we haven't even had these games yet, but I am going to ask you about the next Olympic cycle beyond that, because it's another one that's going to be closer to home. Do you think that far ahead? Are you doing any planning, you know, for 2030?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important that we do, because the reality is we need the strength and depth. Again, we need the pipeline of talent coming through. We need to monopolise, hopefully, on the fact that we've elevated awareness of GB Snowsports and our incredible athletes and what it takes to win. But 2030 is another key milestone because, you know, some of the athletes will have competing in these games, so they'll be very young. You know, if you think about it logically, Mia's only just turned 19, Kirsty and Zoe in their young 20s. So there is already some fantastic talent in the mix. When you look at the Carrick Smiths as a family in Alpine, that really excites me.
Yeah, for sure. Listeners to the podcast will be aware of the Carrick Smiths because we've been supporting them for the last couple of years now, and it's great to see them on the World Cup circuit as well. I know their other freestyle athletes, Sandra Cohn was a world champion at the World Junior Olympics. So we have other athletes coming through as well. Well, that's something to look forward to, 2030, but let's focus on 2026. We're definitely going to be supporting all of our athletes, and I really appreciate your time. I hope we see that range of medals, ideally towards the upper end, because I know how important that will be towards funding, which will help 2030 down the track. That's brilliant, Vicky. Thank you so much.
My absolute pleasure, and great to speak to you. Thank you for taking the time.
Vicky mentioned two things there that I want to highlight. Firstly, I recommend you watch the documentary She Who Dares on Discovery Plus, featuring our female athletes. And secondly, she mentioned the Carrick Smith brothers as prospects for the 2030 Games. Now, coincidentally, they have their own documentary out just now, available on Amazon Prime and YouTube, about their story. And I caught up with them earlier this week to find out more about it.
I'm delighted to be joined again today on the Ski Podcast by the Carrick Smith brothers. That is Zach, Freddie and Luca. And we're spread across three countries as we speak just now. Zach, you were telling me you're in Korea at the moment. What have you been doing over in Korea?
Me and Freddie are in Korea doing the Far East Cups. We just kind of like a bit of a spontaneous trip to do some good races for the next over the 2 weeks.
Oh, and it's gone pretty well, I think. I think I read that in the national champs, Zach, you won the slalom and Freddie, you won the GS. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And from that, there's a strong benefit to you for your fist points leading into following seasons.
Yeah, definitely for me. Freddie had already made some decent points in Europa Cup, so he's pretty set. For me, definitely in slalom, yeah.
And Luca, whereabouts are you today?
I'm in Vagrain, our home base in Austria at the moment.
And you were racing in Schladming in the night race last night. How did you find it there?
Yeah, it's a crazy atmosphere. There was whatever 20-something thousand people. Nothing quite like it. The last two Kitzbühel and Schladming have been crazy.
Oh, well, the reason I wanted to talk to you today, I've recently watched a documentary on Amazon Prime, also available on YouTube, called Beyond the Gate. Yeah. And it is your story, essentially family story. You know, we have Emma, who we've had on the podcast before, is your mum and coach, and as I learned ski tech as well, saw her edging and waxing your skis. Your dad Phil is coaching you as well. I don't think there's probably any other family that has three racers all on the circuit at the same time. Zach, I wonder if I can ask you, how did that movie come about?
It was super cool. Dina Star kind of came to us and they said, or from what I first heard, it sounded like they were doing a movie about Clément Noël and we were going to be involved a little bit. And then like a week or two later, turns out they were doing a movie about us and Clément Noël was going to be involved a little bit. So that was quite cool. And they just kind of wanted to just follow us a little bit in some training sessions and kind of lead up to the World Junior Champs like they did in the movie.
Obviously, I saw Clément Noël in there, who's also a Dina Star athlete. Freddie, when did the actual filming take place then?
Well, it was last winter. They came out, it was just after the Youth Olympics, I think, so around Feb, leading up to the World Junior Champs. They filmed some stuff there, and also at the end of the season, when we were training in Lidderzal, they filmed some stuff. The end of the film was there.
Oh, and Luca, you know, you've obviously been filmed while you're skiing on many occasions, but it must be a bit different having a camera crew kind of in your kitchen watching you have a chat and have your breakfast and your meals.
Yeah, it's not that much different to normal, especially when you're racing World Cup. There's cameras all the time everywhere you go, so you get used to it. And it was also a good build up for what we've got coming in our future and trying to prepare us for racing World Cup and on from there.
Cool. And Zach, did it feel weird seeing yourself in that movie, kind of outside of the actual ski action?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. I think it led up quite well to like the build up to the World Juniors and the fact that Luca podiumed and all that. I think everything slotted into place for the movie and it was quite exciting. And to add it, make it even more dramatic with my crash into the net.
Yeah.
No, it was cool watching it, yeah.
I wasn't sure if they played that up a little bit too. Like,
they
oh,
definitely,
okay? Is he on his feet?
Yeah, it was cool. Well, I remember
think
watching
those are the actual reactions from my mum and dad.
Yeah, those are the actual reactions from them. But I remember watching it for the first time and thinking, well, okay, I was up like 30 seconds after. And I mean, it was a big crash. It was like one of the biggest ones I've had racing, but I was completely all right. But they did make it more dramatic than it was, but it was exciting.
Well, that movie is available. I'm going to put links to it in the show notes. And listener, I highly recommend you watch it if you want to get more of an insight into, you know, particularly the sacrifices that your mum and dad have made and are making, but what is required to put in the work to be on the professional skiing circuit. So that's great. Thank you very much.
Well, I really enjoyed talking to the Carrick Smith brothers there. It's been really interesting following their journey, and I'm going to keep supporting them through the Ski Podcast as long as, you know, we keep kind of doing all right, I guess, and getting lots of listeners, then, you know, some of the money that I earn from this will get passed on to them.
Right, let's turn to today's guest, Catherine. You were last on the show displaying your knowledge of Innsbruck back in episode 257, but more recently you've been to Lazuma in Switzerland. Am I right? Is that how it's pronounced? Because there's a lot of Z's in there. It looks like it would be a very high scoring in a game of Scrabble.
Exactly. Apparently, the locals told me that if you just say Satsuma, then Latsuma is the correct pronunciation. Okay. So, Latsuma.
It is quite a weird name. Do you know where it comes from?
Yeah, it's from the valley. Obviously, Latsuma is part of the four valleys of the valley region of Switzerland. And it's a phrase from Valais on dialect, which means the place where you rest or the place where you take a break, which is quite fitting for a ski holiday resort, isn't it?
Yes, it is, although ski holidays can be a little more active than most breaks. So actually, you've already kind of given the game away a little bit there. I mean, I guess most listeners probably haven't heard of it. Maybe if they've been to Verbier, they have. You said it's in the Valais, which is the canton of Switzerland that's very near to Geneva. Can you give us a bit more of a fix as to where it is?
So I flew to Geneva Airport and I took the train direct, switched at Martigny and took another train on to Reed. I think that's the correct pronunciation. It's R-I-D-D-E-S. And from there, I stepped straight into a local family-owned winery, the May Winery, had a wine tasting. And then I hopped on a little minibus for about 20 minutes up to Latsuma. I would have always expected you get there somehow linked through Verbier, but you don't. It's a different route. And I suppose the biggest point to make is that by 2030, they're going to have a new lift connection between Reed and Latsuma, which will be a bit of a game changer.
Okay, so that will make it more like if you're travelling by train to Verbier, for example, where you can get the train. Sometimes you need to change in a Martigny. Sometimes you can go direct to Le Chablis, and then you can get straight on the Cape and go up to Verbier. And you're saying the same sort of thing is planned for Lazuma as well?
Exactly, yeah. There's a lot of development. I mean, Lazuma is basically a secret backdoor to Verbier and the Four Valleys, 410 kilometres of skiing in that region. And yeah, maybe lesser known to a lot of people.
People will have heard of Verbier, and you mentioned, you know, there's 400 kilometres of skiing there. It's the Quatre Valais, if you will, largest ski area in Switzerland. But Lazuma itself, I guess it's got its own ski area. What kind of size is that, and who would you say it's suitable for?
You could buy a separate lift pass. You don't have to buy the Four Valleys lift pass. You can buy the Lazuma Savolaire lift pass. And I think it's around 55 or 60 kilometres. And best suited, I guess, to families and to intermediate skiers. So basically, they've, as part of some new lift infrastructure in the Four Valleys, they've put in a new six-man chairlift, which makes it easier and faster for skiers to get from Lazuma up to the peak of Savolaire. And we skied some, like we were only there last week, lovely, wide open, quiet slopes, lovely blue runs and lovely sweeping red runs up at Savolaire, or Savs as they call it. And local tip, when it snows in the Four Valleys, everyone goes off to rush up to do the big stuff in Verbier. And the local tip is to head for Savolaire, nice mellow pitch, and just play around in the fresh powder there.
That's definitely a good tip. I have been to Verbier a few times. It's true that most people don't tend to spend their time skiing over in that area. I guess perhaps from Verbier, it's a bit more time to get over there, which would perhaps explain why those slopes are a bit emptier. If you're skiing in Lazuma, presumably you get a view down over the valley itself, do you?
Exactly. You get great views of Verbier and the Grand Combat and all the peaks that you see around the Four Valleys. So spectacular views, actually, yeah.
You said there's a lot of a development plan for La Zuma. What kind of style of resort is it? Is it lots of kind of wooden chalets, or are we thinking more apartments?
Yeah, like the population of 300 people, so it's very tiny. And yet you're only one lift away from Verbier and the Four Valleys. Lots of chalets. I mean, some of the buildings are maybe a bit 1960s or 70s. One or two buildings, maybe to my mind, not the prettiest. But I think it's the kind of place where you could be for a week and get to know everyone because it's such a small place. And I think as well, the local people would say they can't survive without that link. They'd be nothing without the link to Verbier. But La Zuma actually contributes quite a lot to the Four Valley area. I skied over there November the 1st, and I was saying to everybody, I was skiing Verbier. It wasn't. I was actually skiing Lac de Vaux, which is in La Zuma. So a lot of the slopes are north-facing. La Zuma enjoys a longer season, yeah, from November through till mid to late April. Also, Vallon d'Arby, which is one of the most popular freeride runs, is in La Zuma as well. So it gives quite a lot to the area.
So that actually got quite a lot of publicity, the early opening for Verbier back in November. And you're saying that was actually on the La Zuma side of things.
Yeah, absolutely, which I wasn't really aware of myself at the time. And sorry, just to go back, you were asking me about development in La Zuma. Interestingly, Xavier de la Rue, one of very famous ex-freeride world champion snowboarder, he is a part owner of Barlo Central in La Zuma. I think that's pretty cool for the village. They want to develop a hotel. I think it's on that site. We're going to see Telly Verbier want to build a hotel in La Zuma, and also going to see the Hotel de la Poste refurbished. So, and then, as I said, the new lift by 2030. And also where they've put in the new six-man or six-person chairlift, that's next to Le Sud ski run, which is a great run. They're going to build a new beginner area just next to the lift, I think within the next 2 years. More accessible for families and for beginners and children. And just in general, more easily accessible to Verbier and the Four Valleys.
It sounds like there are a lot of reasons probably to go there sooner rather than later. I realise all of these elements will improve it. But, you know, I like the idea that it's quite quiet. And presumably you didn't find many Brits over there. Not that, you know, Brits are a bad thing, but some people want to go to a destination that's not populated by Brits and Irish, for that matter.
There were definitely some British people there last week when we were there. And I think, as they say, if you know, you know. And those in the know who realise that it's just one lift ride, you know, I suppose the beauty of it is you're linked. You have access to this big 400 kilometres of slopes in the Four Valleys, but you're in this little village. It's calmer. Verbier has a reputation for nightlife, cosmopolitan, après-ski, all that kind of stuff. This is calmer, quieter. But we stayed in a little mountain hotel called Papillon. 9 double bedrooms run by a Portuguese couple, Anna and Pico. And really great restaurant, best snails I've had anywhere, with a garlic and absinthe sauce. And you can have a room in Papillon from £89 sterling per night. And we're also told about some great, you know, if you also talk about the value that's on offer in La Zuma, you can have apartments from £170 per person for a week, or a chalet for around £350 per person per week. So there's lots of value to be had.
Sure, you still get access to that whole Verbier, Quatre Vallées ski area, yet at a completely different cost. That's brilliant, Catherine. I think that will be another option that will be going on lots of people's lists. Really interesting way to explore a little bit more of Switzerland that maybe most of us haven't covered before. Thanks so much for that. If it's all right with you, I'm going to move on to Richard now. Right. I'm really looking forward to this conversation with you, Richard. I was quite surprised when I realised we have only featured Slovakia on the podcast once before. And that was back in episode 243 when we covered the Going East, the fantastic story of the group of free riders who went to Turkey by train, skiing at different stops along the way. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. We have featured the similar sounding Slovenia, but the countries are very different. I wondered if we could start by reminding listeners where Slovakia is on the map.
Yeah, most people that I talk to when I say I no longer live in England, I've moved to Slovakia, they always remember it as Slovenia every single time, whether it's English people or American people, it's always Slovenia. So Slovakia is to the east of Czechia, the Czech Republic, below Poland, so where I'm living in Poprad. It's just 40 minutes south of the Polish border, and south below us is Hungary.
Yeah, and it also borders onto Austria as well, right?
Yes, Bratislava, the capital, borders Vienna, yes, in Austria, yep.
So I guess the easiest way, most people would be aware that there once was a country called Czechoslovakia, and that was split into the Czech Republic and Slovakia. So have a look on the map if you're not really too sure. Now, I'm really interested. I don't know many people who live out there. How long have you lived there and why did you choose to base yourself there?
Yeah, I've been here since the summer and I've been coming here for over 10 years because my wife is from here. We decided to leave England last year and we sold our house. We were living in Somerset. It all completed around July, August this year. And this is my new base. I'm very happy here. Very happy to be here. It's a fantastic region. It's really lovely to be living near the mountains and getting some cold weather and some fresh snow pretty regularly.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the dream for lots of people is to do what you did today. And you know, there's some fresh snow. You could just go to a ski resort that I think you said was 15 minutes away and get some skiing in. That's fantastic. I asked you to come on the show after I read your blog post about the transformation going on in the High Tatras. And you've written that Slovakia is entering its Austria in the 90s phase. And I wondered what you meant by that.
Yeah, I appreciate you reading that. I have a very small newsletter at Tatras.ski where I talk about the area. So there was a big Forbes article about the company that owns the majority of the big ski resorts and facilities and hotels and infrastructure in Slovakia, which is called Tatry Mountain Resorts. And this article was in Slovak, and so my Slovak is not very good. I put it into ChatGPT. I said to create a newsletter out of this for the B2B ski market in the UK. And that was its conclusion. It does remind me. So, I've been skiing most of my life. I'm in my mid-40s. I started when I was a teenager. You know, my parents took me on ski holidays to Austria. It does remind me of back then in the 90s. There's no major ski company, tour operator, Crystal, Ingham's. None of them are in Slovakia, as far as I'm aware. The only one that lists holidays in Slovakia that I've seen is Heidi. So there's no way you can essentially buy a package. Heidi are bundling it with a Ryanair flight. I imagine that would be into Slovakia's second biggest city called Košice in the east, which is an hour away from here. There's a local airport here in Poprad with flights to Luton on Wizz Air. But no, there's no easy way to book it. So you're going to have to be an independent traveler. You're going to have to sort out your hotels, your flights, your lift ticket. But the infrastructure here is really impressive for such an unknown place, at least for the British market.
So you saw this Forbes article, which was in Slovakian.
So the company's called TMR, Tatry Mountain Resorts. Yeah, they're the big company that owns all of the resorts.
And are they doing a lot of development of the resorts in Slovakia at the moment?
In terms of an impressive amount of new lifts and new runs opening, they own a number of the biggest hotels and grand hotels in the region as well. In terms of marketing, there's not a lot happening in terms of attracting the British market. I would like to help with that. I used to go to the ski shows back in the day. It would be great to really help put Slovakia on the British map because these resorts are impressive.
And you say the resorts are impressive. So Jasna is the correct pronunciation. And I think a lot of people will have heard of that. That is the biggest resort. I had a little look. It looks like it's got 49 kilometres apiece. What's that like? Who would you say it's suitable for?
So I'm sure the 49 kilometres is accurate. I haven't measured it myself, but that's really misleading. It's actually a very big mountain. We're on both sides, the north side and the south and a backside. It's a fantastic little ski area. So I did a ski season in Whistler in Canada. And it really does remind me of like a mini Whistler. It has all the terrain that you would want. It has some very big free ride type terrain. There's actually free ride competitions that have been held there. There's a lot of tree skiing. There's a lot of ridge skiing on powder days, huge wide open bowls. So really, yeah, it is a resort for everyone. There's a beginner area as well, but I would say it's definitely more for intermediate and advanced intermediate and experts. On good snow days, they're going to have a fantastic time.
And what kind of altitude are we talking about then for Jasna, like let's say at resort level and up at the top?
It's a really beautiful winding road to get to the resort with a lot of different car parks and levels on the way. At the lowest level, I think it's about 750 meters at a car park and at a lift station called Lučki, which I park at. I have free parking there with my GoPass ticket. If you want to get to the actual resort, that it's over 1,000 meters, 1,100 meters. So the elevation is, in terms of Western Europe, you would think that it's pretty low. The top of the mountain at Hopok is 2,000 meters, but it's cold out here. The snow lasts a long time after it falls, and a mountain like Yasna, it's not going to be tracked out. You're going to be able to find fresh snow and fresh tracks to get weeks after a snowfall.
It already sounds attractive, because I think that's what so many people love to look at. We mentioned that Going East documentary earlier. The crew from that, it was episode 243, went to, and I'm going to try this, Sturry Smokovich. Is that where you went skiing this morning?
Yep.
Wow, I can't believe I got that right. What's that like as a resort then?
Yeah, that's a tiny little hill. So where I live is at the base of the High Tatra Mountains, and there are three resorts, but really only kind of two proper resorts. And the one in the middle is literally two drag lifts, which is what I was on this morning. But it's really nice parking. It's very modern resort. One wonderful cafe and bakery. I go there with my laptop in the mornings, and then I have a quick ski. It's a mountain that... with the Going East guys, they would have hiked up and they would have explored it. It's not a mountain that you would spend any more than a few hours there. It's great for children learning to ski. I took my eight-year-old there, one of the first places she learned. But in the High Tatras, the biggest resort is called Tatranska Lomnica, which is in the east, another 5 to 10 minutes down the road. And that's a very impressive infrastructure resort. And then in the west, there's a resort higher up called Strebsky Plazo. That's just had a brand new 8-man chairlift, and it is a bit smaller. But in the High Tatras, you have two main resorts, and then you have this one in the middle that you mentioned that I was there this morning.
Oh, and you've already mentioned a couple of times the Go Pass. I wondered if you could tell us a little more about that. I did kind of read about it. It looks like it can deliver excellent value for money.
It's the infrastructure and ticketing system and lift system for the resorts that Tatra Mountain Resort owns. In the High Tatras, Yasna, they own one or two resorts in Poland. They actually own a glacier resort in Austria, the Maltala Gletscher Resort in Austria. So there's 10 resorts on the Go Pass if you have a season pass. And if you get the early bird, which I did, it's 550 euros that I paid. It's very good value. It's very modern. You have a credit card pass, and you can use it to access everywhere, and you can, if you buy food or use any shops, you get points, and you can use that for ski lessons. And it's just a very, very modern system that you wouldn't expect if you didn't know anything about Slovakia. Yeah.
And so I'm thinking that possibly if people were coming from the UK, where most of our listeners are based, but you know, the travel people are all over the world who listen to the podcast. You mentioned about those flights from the UK going into Bratislava. You could fly into Krakow, I think, in Poland as well. Or your town, which is Poprad, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to kind of mix it, you know, some skiing and, let's say, a city break at the same time, what would people expect to, you know, see or try in those cities?
So, I mean, the best way of getting here is to fly into the Poprad Tatry Airport. It's a very small airport. Obviously, one runway, one very small building. It's not going to take long to get through customs or anything. And then you're literally a 10-15 minute drive or train ride. And there's beautiful train, old fashioned, but a beautiful red and white mountain train that goes up to the mountains on a cog system part of it. Often have to stop for it on the way to school in the morning or the way to the mountains. Very easy to get to the mountains from the airport here. If you want to go to the biggest ski resort, which is Yasna, it's a 40-minute drive. There's also a train stop that you can get as well. I guess the biggest selection of flights would be Ryanair into the city called Košice, and then you really would have like a big Slovakian city experience as well. Košice is in the east. Yeah, it's a very modern country. I mean, coming from England, everything here feels a lot more modern, I have to say.
I guess, I don't know if you're allowed to compare the Czech Republic and Slovakia, because evidently they are different countries. But, you know, a lot of people would go to Prague and think, oh, the beer there is fantastic. Are there any culinary delights to discover in Slovakia?
There's like wonderful potato pasta with sheep's cheese and bacon. But there's wonderful, you know, baked pork dishes. And the food out here is excellent. I mean, I had lunch today. I had pork bravčovi, and everything is really nice. Traditional food. I eat out every day. I live very well here. So yes, you're going to have a good experience, in a similar way to the local dishes that you would find in Austria. Slovakia has its own dishes, yeah.
Oh, and the GoPass sounds like it's probably going to be suitable for someone who's staying for a longer period of time, I would guess. But typically, I would imagine prices in general in Slovakia are less than, for example, France, Austria, etc.
Yes. If you, in terms of the season pass, and if you get it early enough, it's definitely less expensive. The actual tickets, I would not say that they are cheap anymore. I'd say that they are pretty similar to what you would get in Western countries now. So the day or the week tickets are probably going to be similar price. But getting here and then staying here and then the food is definitely still a much better value than what you would find in Western Europe. Yeah.
Oh, and we touched on when we talked about Lazuma. The fact that maybe you might not find as many British holiday makers there. What's the kind of international breakdown in Slovakia? I'm guessing there are very few Brits on the slopes.
I'm hearing a lot more British speakers every day now. People from England in local cafes that I go to. It's quite surprising, but yeah, these are not kind of ski tourist. You often hear a lot of English being spoken in hotels and cafes, but yeah, we don't have the package holidays yet. Yeah, I think a lot of English people are experiencing and discovering Slovakia.
Oh, excellent. Well, that's brilliant, Richard. I'll put a number of links into the show notes for listeners who want to find out a little bit more about it, including to your blog and to your Instagram as well. Now, we're just moving towards the close now. If you've enjoyed this episode, or even if you didn't like it, I would love to know. You can leave a comment on Spotify, Instagram, or Facebook. Our handle is @theskipodcast, or you can drop me an email to theskipodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on WhatsApp for exclusive material released ahead of the podcast. You can look in the show notes for that link. We've had quite a few bits of feedback since the last episode. David Flynn said, "I'm an Irish-French listener, love the podcast. It's become a staple diet in my household and is a lifesaver for walks with dogs on the beach." Gavin Marsden said, "I love each and every episode." Thank you, Gavin. Antonia Simpson enjoyed episode 272, mentioned her son is about to go to Mont-Tremblant in Canada. Another resort we'll have to cover one day. Andrew Wilson said, "I am a regular listener. I only took up skiing at the age of 50 4 years ago and love it." And Andrew Brannan very kindly bought me a coffee. He said, "Ian, your podcast is excellent. Thank you for going to the trouble and not just reading out the latest press releases from Crystal. I just finished listening to your Val d'Isère item on making special runs for slow skiers. It's a great story and reminds me of one time in Mirabel when two big blokes overtook us using my snowplowing kids as slalom poles." So hopefully, Andrew, the rise of slow skiing will help with that. There are now 292 episodes of the Ski Podcast to catch up with, and 149 of those were listened to in the last week. If you'd like to get some insight on a particular destination or latest kit, just go to theskipodcast.com, have a search around the tags and categories, and you're bound to find something of interest to listen to. I can also tell you in the last week, most of our listeners are in the UK, with 20% in the States and everyone else spread as far and wide as Lithuania, Qatar, and Nepal. If you'd like to help the podcast, there are three things you can do. You can follow us or subscribe so you never miss an episode. You can give us a review on Apple Podcasts and leave a comment on Spotify. And if you're booking ski hire this winter, don't forget that you get an additional discount if you use code SKIPODCAST when you book at insportrent.com, or simply take the link in the show notes for your discount to be automatically applied. I'd like to thank my guest today, Catherine.
Thanks for having me and for listening to my husky voice.
There's no problem at all. And Richard, thank you.
Thanks so much, Ian. Appreciate it.
I'd like to thank Tyrol for sponsoring the podcast. And finally, listener, thank you for joining us wherever in the world you're listening right now. And until next time, goodbye.